All right, so we are discussing the relationship between knowledge and pleasure. Maybe we don't think about that. We think that pleasure just comes to you. What's the big deal? And you know that even people say, what you don't know won't hurt you. Ignorance is bliss. But actually, if you want the best pleasure, then you have to have the best knowledge. And therefore, you all are looking for something out of the ordinary. Many of you have already experienced whatever it is that material existence can offer you. There's not much variety in material existence. There's a Sanskrit term that refers to the lack of potential in material existence. Puna puna charvana charvana. Chewing that which has already been chewed. Think about that. Analytically, please, scientifically. If you chew something, and according to medical advice, you're supposed to chew each mouthful of food, what, 30 times? Yes. Most people don't do that. Anyone here thinks consciously how many times they should chew their food? So, you chew it very thoroughly, and then, would you actually think of passing it to someone else and saying, now you please get the flavor? No. You never think of doing that. But in our attempts to live life and find our potential, that's what we're doing. One generation passes down to the next generation. One friend passes to another friend. One partner to another partner. Here, take this. I've chewed it very thoroughly. Actually, I can't get a taste, but maybe you'll get a taste from it. And that way, you build up a society in which everyone is pursuing taste, but they can't get any taste out of what they're doing. Well, there's a little something there. That's enough to tantalize you. You can come to this understanding at different stages of your life. Some do it very early, some later, most never at all. So this ignorance is what blocks our quest for our potential. You're actually living in a society that restricts your options. Your focus is narrowed to economic development. Stimulating your senses, stimulating your mind. And then reproducing and teaching your products to do the same. Actually, an intelligent person can see this process is not very enlivening at all. It's actually very dehumanizing. But society doesn't encourage any other options. So even if you have some inclination to get the best pleasure, the best knowledge, you get very little support from persons around you. That's why someone who is determined to have the best pleasure and the best knowledge has to be quite self-motivated these days. No seats for you?
We're good.
You have to be quite self-motivated. Now, this self-motivation can come from this life or a previous life. Some persons, they've done some spiritual progress in their previous life, and therefore they're continuing in this life. If any of you have read Bhagavad Gita, You'll know Krishna explains what happens to yogis who don't complete their spiritual perfection. There are two divisions for yogis who are incomplete. One division, those who give up the yoga process. We're speaking about Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga. That's the top of the yoga ladder. Connecting to the Supreme through pure love. So someone may start it and drop it after a short time. And someone may start it and not drop it, but just don't complete the course. Just like here at the university, some persons take up a course and drop it quickly. Others go through the course to the end, but they don't master it. So in either case, for those who take up the bhakti yoga process, the Krishna conscious process in a previous life, and don't get the ultimate result in one lifetime, you continue your progress in the next life. So nothing is lost. Perhaps a few of you are like that. And somehow or other, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita what happens. Spontaneously, automatically, you become attracted to spiritual development. Automatically, you're looking for the highest pleasure, the highest knowledge. It's just a natural continuation of what you did in your previous birth. And then, some of you have not at all made any progress in terms of understanding the difference between the body and the self, the mind and the self, in terms of understanding what is the source of all energies, what's the source of consciousness. No progress in the previous life. And so you're just starting now. We have all different types of persons at different levels who gather together. And they don't know, generally, where they're at until they start to hear about Krishna consciousness. They start to hear about bhakti yoga. And then they react accordingly. You see some people, oh yeah, it's like they're waking up from amnesia. And others, oh no, this is the last thing I want to hear. That was my reaction when I first heard about Krishna consciousness last month at the university. I like to explain the story. You might find it interesting. May of 72, I was finishing my thesis for graduation. My flatmate was preparing for his physics final. And so we decided to turn on the television just to get some relief. But we didn't watch television in the ordinary way because, well, it's easy to explain this in the UK because it has a similar educational system as the USA. We were Yale students, so like, you know, Harvard, Yale, Oxford, Cambridge, something like that. So we could not watch the television in the way of the ordinary students. We had to watch television with the volume turned all the way down, and then we would speculate on what was happening. That way we distinguished ourselves as, you know, superlative students. So, all of a sudden I saw on the TV screen someone who's looking like I am looking now. I said, what is that? It was a few of them. Guys dressed in saffron. And some had white cloth on. Ladies, you know, wearing saris. I turned to my flatmate and said, hey, this is, where did these aliens come from? Let's hear what they're talking about. I can't figure out at all what they're saying. So, we turn up the volume and we listen as these Krishna conscious persons begin to explain knowledge and their lifestyle. So what was my first reaction when I heard them explain their lifestyle? What do you think I said? Wow, this is great. This is just what I'm looking for. Well, they were explaining, you know, various behavioral patterns they follow, behavioral guidelines of purity. They started talking about they don't do this, they don't do that, they don't do that. So I turned to my flatmate and said, these people are fools. They've missed the goal of life. These Krishna conscious practitioners on television, they began to speak about pleasure and bliss, using the Sanskrit word ananda, pure bliss. So I said to my flatmate, they talk about pure bliss. They talk about pleasure. Let's invite them to one of our parties. We'll show them what pleasure is. So that was my first encounter with Krishna conscious persons. That was my reaction. So now you may be thinking, well, what happened? Well, you see, in my university days, I prided myself on being a pleasure lover. And all my friends, you know, they gave me that title. You know, they could always count on me to find out where the good times were. But then I began to think, if I'm actually a pleasure lover, I should know what the topmost pleasure is. And how can there be a topmost pleasure if it has a beginning and end? I began to seriously think about this. All the pleasures I know have a beginning and end. This is not very intelligent. I need knowledge to introduce me to pleasure that doesn't have a beginning or end. So I was really serious about that. And indeed, that kind of quest took me out of the ordinary. Because ordinarily, as you know, all the pleasures people know have a beginning and end, right? In fact, so much of what we call pleasure is hope. Oh, I think this is going to be good. Maybe some of you have experienced that before a weekend event. Yes, it's going to be nice. It's going to be a good time, right? We'll forget all our troubles, all the pains from our studies. We're going to have a good time. So a lot of what people call pleasure is that anticipation. It's going to be good, it's going to be good. But you know that rarely does the event live up to the anticipation. And even if it happens to, the effect fades very quickly. And you're left kind of, okay, now what? If we're going to actually realize our potential, we've got to find pleasure that is not affected by beginnings or ends. So I wonder, how many of you have wondered about that? Indeed, in order to have a successful human life, we need to come to grips with this issue of what is real pleasure. Because you can't stop wanting pleasure. Have any of you tried? I'm not into pleasure anymore. That's it, I've had it. Anyone? Feel that way? You won't give up, right? You may have gotten burned, but you'll keep on going. Maybe some of you have already said like that. You know, never again. Ladies are reputed to say, I'll never fall in love again, that's it. I want to ask if any of you have said like that. Everyone's got their own, I'll never do it again. And then what happens?
You do it again.
Right. Why?
Because you think that the next time might be different, or you try something else that might be better than the last time.
So you don't give up, right? Can you give a practical example?
Sorry?
Can you give an example?
No.
Heroin addiction.
Or is it that you all simply study all the time? I don't know. Just study, go to class, that's it?
And short exams, yeah, and then?
And then after exams, what happens?
You go there.
Until?
Next time, next exams. Pretty boring life.
I see. So, you won't give up your quest for pleasure. You can't. As a conscious being, by nature, you're pleasure-seeking. So real yoga has to deal with that. Otherwise, it's missed the point. Material society deals with that point. It offers you all sorts of temporary thrills and hopes. And you work hard for that. I wonder, have you all ever analyzed your hopes and aspirations? What do you think? For example, what are your...
Just to be a successful doctor.
Successful doctor. And what's the mark of a successful doctor? How do you judge? What's the criteria?
People looking up to you, respecting you. You're doing your job properly, buddy.
You saved my life. You saved my life. All right.
Yes, that's it.
Look, another way a successful doctor is one who gets the most bonuses from the pharmaceutical companies.
Huh? Gets taken out to dinner by the drug reps.
Oh, I think they'd be more to take you out to dinner. You can ask him.
This is true.
Gorkishore in the back there. He works for a pharmaceutical. That's his line.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, but a successful doctor, he would help to relieve people's pain, is that it? Or what? What does a successful doctor do?
Quality.
Improves
quality of life.
Improves the quality of life.
Empathetic.
Just returns into a state of health where they can go and get more pleasure out of
Well, that's an honest answer. Very good. Very good. For a short time, right?
Yeah, until they get elegant.
Because the mortality rate is 100%. That reminds me how a few years ago I was speaking at University of Cape Town in South Africa. University of Cape Town is considered like the finest institution of African continent. So, I was speaking to students just like I'm speaking now. And particularly one young lady was interested. She and her friends. So I said, well, come over to our center afterwards. We can discuss more. And I asked, well, where are you from? And she said, oh, we're all from Botswana. So they were going to come over that evening, so I decided to do some research. What is Botswana and what goes on there? I found out that Botswana is just a small landlocked country north of South Africa, and the average life expectancy is 32 years. So when they came over, these students, they came over to see me. I said, well, how old are you? So we're 21, 22. I said, do you realize, according to your national average, you've got 10 more years to live? I said, yeah, we know. So, I guess a successful doctor would increase that from 32 to
76.
76.
64.
You're
tall.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you can give them 30. What's the British average?
It's about 76.
For a man? Or a woman? Woman's always
a woman's 78.
Yeah. Okay, you squeeze out, so let's say, 40 more years for them. And that's success.
Not bad.
So what do they do in that time? Whether they live to 32 or 72, what do they do?
Have more experiences. Enjoy life.
This reminds me of a verse from the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita called Srimad Bhagavatam, where it said, what is the value of having a prolonged life if that life is inexperienced due to lack of genuine knowledge? Better to live a short life if that short life is full in Krishna consciousness. It's a totally different way of looking at success. Well, what's the use of having a long life if you have no idea what you're doing? Better live a short life if in that short life there's just a few moments of real knowledge, real understanding. That's better than a long life of just wasted by inexperience and lack of understanding. So this is a different way of analyzing life than just longevity. People like to feel proud that, longevity has increased, people are living longer these days. But that will distract you from the quality of life. Understanding the quality of life. So the Krishna conscious vision is, let's look at the quality first, the quantity second. It's true that this human form of life gives you the advanced consciousness to have a discussion like we're having now. So the human form of life is special. There's no doubt about that. So you should want to live a healthy life so you can use the human body and its developed consciousness for attaining the ultimate goal. Otherwise, there's no point in living a long life. Think about it and try to look at things in that way. So, successful doctor. You want to have the feeling that you're helping others.
The way I look at it is that some people aren't as cynical, so they wouldn't. They're stopping.
Some people aren't as cynical?
As well. So I'm quite cynical.
Uh-huh.
Other people are just in the material world,
uh-huh.
And they're not really aware of anything different to that. They just enjoy it for what it is. So even though I don't personally see there being any sort of point to life, by saving the lives of people that enjoy it for what it is, then you're sort of deriving your own purpose to life from that.
Oh, you don't see any point to life?
Well, not as in I don't see a point to living, just as in I don't see what the purpose of life is. If you see what I mean.
Yeah, I see what you mean. You don't see what the purpose of life is,
yeah.
But if you can help others,
then you're somehow getting your own purpose from that.
Because it's your role.
Yeah.
To help.
You're creating your own
meaning. Yeah.
Creating what?
His own meaning to life.
Yeah.
Which is?
To help others enjoy life.
From the people that see a purpose, and you give them that purpose back, you're giving yourself a purpose.
Yeah. Reminds you of something my father told me when I was 14. My father was a great follower of, man, I know who he is now, Hugh Hefner. That was his idol. Everyone knows who Hugh Hefner is. Huh? Yeah. So, he told me, he was trying to relate to me. You know, I was 14. So I said, son, the purpose of life is to leave some tracks in the sand for when you're gone. What do you think about that? So whatever you do, son, just try to leave some tracks in the sand. So after you're gone, there'll be recognition. There'll be that you've done something substantial. So I said, well, Dad, that sounds interesting. I would be concerned with, you know, regardless of the tracks, where do you go when you're gone? I said, no, son, that's not the point. That's not the point. Just leave the tracks in the sand. Never mind where you go. Just leave some tracks in the sand when you're gone. I said, well, Dad, I want to know, where do you go? I think that's more important. Not the tracks in the sand, but where do you go? I said, after all, the tracks in the sand will be blown away by the wind. They'll be washed away by the tide. But where does the person go who left the tracks? Oh, son, you're just not thinking in the right way. He was trying in his own way, based on very limited knowledge of things beyond the material. I mean, materially, he was smart, but beyond the material now. He said, look, my boy, if you just start thinking about those kind of questions, you never get anywhere. Life is not meant to be a spectator sport. You gotta just get into it. So, if we don't know what is the purpose of life, how can you really help others?
But I think lots of people, they do get stuck into life. So you're just,
but you might be
helping them on.
You might be helping them ruin themselves.
But if they don't know any better than
ignorance and bliss, right? What you're saying reminds me of the famous or infamous French philosopher Albert Camus. That's a very interesting thing. Don't try to lead me. Don't try to follow me. Just walk together with me through the chaos. What do you think of that?
I'd have to think about
it. Sounds like a good line you could say to a girl at a cafe, you know? Remember. Yeah, but at a magic moment, you can come out with that. Get a starry, you know, get some stars in your eyes. Like, I don't want to lead you. I don't want you to follow me. Let's just walk together through the chaos. What do you say? Would you go for that one?
No.
Really?
It came from some, you know, if someone said it to you in a cafe or something, if it's used in that way, then it would be, I think. It's what it's used for, really, isn't it?
It's just an honest appeal amidst all the confusion and lack of understanding. Let's not try to figure it out. Let's just be together. How's that sound?
Yeah, it sounds
better. I think it's the same thing.
It's not said in such a
way. You know. Oh, it's got more feeling to it.
Yeah,
the second
it's a bit more meaning to it.
More emotional impact.
It says the way I believed you more when you said
it. It was interesting. All right. Yeah.
Same as him. Have a family. Stuck on the end of that. That'd be nice.
Have a family. Yeah. Why? Why do you have a family?
I don't know. Well, looking at it from the opposite view of not having a family, I just think it's kind of a lonely way to have life. Because
it's a what?
A lonely way to lead life.
So you're just going to reproduce just to, you know, create some, you know, some action, you know, some your own tribe, huh?
Yeah, take over the world.
Then you won't be lonely, huh?
Well, no, it's kind of true, because no matter how close friends you have,
excluding God. You'll never have anyone as close as, say, a wife or kids.
For how long?
Well, until you die, but
that's fine. Do you know social statistics?
Oh, yeah. Well, the kid's not divorced anyway.
They just vote with their feet. They just vote, you know?
Fair enough. Well, I'll be selective, though.
Selective in terms of?
A wife.
Oh, everyone says that.
I think I disagree with that. I mean, as much as I'd like to have a family one day, I think people like yourself or other religious followers that remain celibate and they try to gain that kind of purity, I think they strive for more happiness at the end of the day.
Well, since you brought me into that picture.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, with you know, your quest in life to be, well, closer to God, like, I think, obviously, suffering comes from it as well, in the sense that you have to, like, this is just quite trivial, but when you meditate, you feel pain. When you suffer, like you meditate, like you might sit for a long time and it might give you cramps and you may suffer from that, but to plow through, you get something more from it, like getting closer to God.
You mean to say I would tolerate some minor inconveniences for superior pleasure?
Yeah, but on a spiritual front, not a
physical.
Yeah, but you do get cramps when you sit and meditate. Maybe not like, it's true.
I think you missed the point, because the point is that when you have a child, it's a longer pleasure than, say you took cocaine. It lasts for half an hour. That's the pleasure's got a beginning and end. When you have a child, it begins when you have a child, and it ends if the child dies.
Well, it begins after that.
No,
but when you've got knowledge, that's ongoing forever. There's no end to that.
Alright, my point was, if I don't know what I'm doing, and I perpetuate myself and reproduce, I'm bringing into the world, you know, persons, you know, that's a responsibility, but I don't know who I am, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm, you know, I'm populating the world, that's not very good, is it? What am I supposed to say to the kids? Now look, I don't know what's going on. You don't know what's going on.
We could try that.
Just try to be successful, make money, and life goes on.
Do you not think on some level ignorance can be bliss?
Give me an example.
Well, for example, if you're, I don't know, if you mentally can't perceive there being anything but the material world, then you become satisfied with that realization.
Like a physicalist scientist, for example.
Okay, yeah, and you just blunder through life continuously, and you always just think, oh, and you're just waiting for the good moments all the time. And even though there's more suffering than there is happiness for most people, the highlights of the happiness overcloud the suffering, and so you just continually have that. Whereas a person who realizes that there is something else out there, but doesn't have the willpower, say, to actually stick to it, like the person you said who would come into KC and then after a few years drop out or something because they're too attracted to the material world. Truly, that's more suffering because you can see it but you can't get there. You know, put it another way, if you're drowning and you can't see any lifeboats, then it's, you know, you're unhappy, but at least you know there's nothing else you can do.
The problem with that ignorance is bliss angle is that there is innate intelligence coming from the soul, and so you just, even though you may say, I'm just going to be ignorant, I don't care, I'm going to get wasted, I'm not going to think about anything, you can't really do that. There's something in you that's pushing you.
But there are some people who I talk to who are so sure that there is absolutely nothing out there. They're not even slightly agnostic, like, they're just completely certain that there's definitely nothing.
That's very unfortunate, Dan, because they're missing out on the superior pleasure.
Yeah, but my point is that they don't realize it.
At what point in their life you would say they don't realize it? Have you ever talked to old people with that point of view?
No.
Try it.
Okay.
They're miserable. And they may say, oh, I know I'm going to be dead soon, and after death is going to be nothing. And then talk to them right when they're about to die, if they're not heavily sedated.
They
don't change their mind. It's just the sheer terror of it all. Yeah. It's too much, you know.
Well, I didn't see how anyone could be afraid of death, religious or not. I didn't see how anyone could be afraid of death, religious or not.
It's fear of the unknown, though, isn't it?
If you're sure that there's nothing there, then watch out.
Still, you can talk like, yeah, there's nothing there, that's it. But when you're actually up against the wall, you know, it's terrifying. The fact that, you know, that's it for you. You don't know what's going to, you know, just... Of course, some people do commit suicide thinking that'll be it, you know. But medical science, as known today, can't give an accurate portrayal of what someone is actually feeling at the moment of the, you know, of death. It may look all peaceful to you, to die in the sleep. Is that the ultimate goal of life? To die peacefully in your sleep when you're 70, whatever, 77? But you don't know what it's like for that person to go through that. You're looking externally, physically, that, well, they just seem to drop off and don't wake up, you know? But you don't see what they're going through inside. And medical science can't tell you that. What a conscious person is going through at the time of death. Of course, medical science can't even tell you what consciousness is. Bit of a problem there.
Do you mind explaining the Sanskrit term called sati panya?
Mm-hmm.
It's called like mindfulness or something. It's sati or something. I've come across that word, but...
First of all, you have to be mindful of what you are, and then you can go beyond that. But if you don't understand what you are you matter, or you, or something beyond matter, then what's the use of mindfulness? You have to understand what you're being mindful of. Simply to be mindful of your breathing, well, that's no great accomplishment. Simply to be mindful of your bodily functions, that's no great accomplishment. So we have to know what to be mindful of. All right. Purpose. We have what? The doctor is going to... who has no purpose, but will get a purpose by medically saving persons who think they have a purpose. And then we have...
same aspect with the family.
Doesn't know what the purpose is, but will have children. Purposeless children. Who will continue the purposeless existence.
If everyone became into this superior pleasure in an ideal world, then...
Don't worry, everyone won't. Everyone won't.
No, but that is the point, isn't it?
Everyone won't.
You want everyone to die. Well, then you got all the schools in the place you want.
That's like saying if everyone would go to the university. Not everyone's going to go to the university. Not everyone will take to superior consciousness. So, purpose?
I don't know. I don't think I've got, like, one thing where I want to be that person. But, it made me think when you said about your dad telling you, not the sand bit, but he said it's about enjoying life and living for the moment and, you know, and making the most of opportunities. I want to make the most of everything that's given to me in my life, and I want to learn. I can say the purpose of my life is to be a good doctor, or the purpose of my life is to have a family, because once you've got that, then what? I think there's more to life than that. I think it's about learning.
Learning what?
I don't know, just understanding everything around you. Understanding people, understanding.
Well, everything. Then you have to begin with understanding yourself. What are you?
What am I? That's a horrible question.
This is my point. This is the nature of society today. What are you? I'm a university student. I know, but what are you? They don't teach you that. This is the problem at the root of Western so-called civilization. Lack of understanding identity. What is identity? This is a big problem. And you're going to see this problem cause a lot of quakes because people have tried to have a reductionist understanding of the self. We're just matter. Consciousness is just matter. There's no proof for that, though. They've tried, and look at the social consequences. Literally, people are cracking up. Mental depression is becoming soon, very soon, in a few short years, the number two disease in the world, behind heart disease. And where is that mental depression going on? Not in the third world countries. It's going on in the first world countries. They're the ones who are shooting up the stats for mental depression. But something's not working out here.
I think it'd be nice if somebody just gave it to you on a plate as to how to break free from like the cycle of karma.
Okay. Really?
It would be nice.
Okay.
But I
don't
Really?
It doesn't
happen.
How hungry are you?
For it.
For the plate, yeah.
The plate?
Yeah.
I'd say not that hungry at the moment because I'm not suffering, but when I am, I probably will be.
That's made you suffer.
No.
You looked at it another way. You could be missing out on something. That's much better.
When I see people that have been to some form of level, then like some form of like higher spiritual level, then I kind of want to know about it. Does that make sense? Just because I want to know what it's like.
Yeah.
Why is it so special?
Yes. You are whom you associate with. So if you associate with persons on a higher level, you'll be inspired to be on a higher level.
I think that's true.
If you associate with persons who, you know, are party animals, you become a party animal. It's a rare person who can kind of just totally shake off any effects of association and march to a different beat. Most persons are creatures of association. So what is your purpose?
It would be quite a materialistic one at the moment.
Like, well, then it should be easy to say.
It should be easy to say, but that's not actually what I want, but that's what I have in the forefront of my mind, but I know it's not what
I
want.
Okay, what's in the forefront right now?
The forefront? Finish medical school.
Finish medical school. Why?
To make my parents proud. Feel some self-accomplishment in my life.
All right. You finished medical school. Now your parents are proud. And I have achieved. Okay, then what? You know, this is very shaky stuff, you know?
It is shaky. Because, like you said, everything comes to an end one day. One day we won't be doctors or we'll retire and die and be old. Like, there's something more to that. It's a bit hard to grasp when you're put on the spot to say, what's your purpose? Very hard question to answer. But over the summer, I'd like to learn more about meditation. That's my purpose over the summer.
Real meditation gives you an experience of your identity beyond the body and mind. Begins with that. And then it culminates with giving you an experience of the ultimate reality. Just like you are a conscious entity, so similarly there is a supreme conscious entity. So meditation culminates by giving you an experience of the relationship between you, the conscious entity, and the supreme conscious entity. If meditation doesn't do that, throw it out. There's no point in just meditating on your breath. You'll become calmer and your blood pressure will go down, no doubt about it, but still it's all physiological. And yes, the mind is related in many ways to physiology. But so what? Real meditation has to take you beyond that. You should want to connect to the source of all energy. When you look at the world, you're seeing energies. according to the degree of your perception, you'll see different energies. So, in any case, no matter how much energy you see, what is the source of the energy? So real meditation has to bring you to that source. Because then you'll find the source of all the pleasure. So that is what Krishna consciousness is about.
Can I ask a question?
Okay.
What gives you your happiness? Is it knowledge of scripture and reassurance of...
Knowledge of scripture, that sounds boring.
Knowledge
of scripture. God, it sounds like a theological seminary. Scary.
Or is it chanting, or is it something else?
Krishna consciousness, or as it's known in the Sanskrit term, bhakti yoga, is about using your senses to connect with superior sense objects.
Okay.
So that answer I'm giving you takes you far away from the precincts of religious faith and belief and into simply experience, entering the laboratory and getting experience. The material experience means connecting your senses to material sense objects, which are temporary. The Krishna conscious experience means connecting your senses to sense objects that are non-material and are permanent.
How do you know when you're doing that? Because there's lots of people who meditate purely on an atheistic level.
Right.
And they're still they're happier than someone, say, who doesn't.
They're more relaxed.
Yeah, but...
But how long will that relaxation last? As soon as there's some upset, which must happen in this world, then you see what the real situation is. And even if they seem more relaxed temporarily, what is a life without complete knowledge? In other words, we don't just want to be relaxed, we want to understand everything. If you understand everything, then you'll be able to have the best pleasure. Suffering is based on ignorance. Now, let's say if I became sick, and the doctor here and the doctor there, you know, they put their heads together and they gave me some pharmaceuticals and I got healthy. Would I just say, oh, you guys, you're just dealing with the temporary. Yeah, what's the big deal, you know? So you made my temporary body healthy. No, I wouldn't say that. I would be grateful. But I wouldn't think you solved my problems in life. That's the difference. So I'd be grateful that you cure the disease, but I wouldn't make the mistake of thinking you've actually solved my main problem in life. That's the difference.
So what's your aim for this life then?
My aim for this life? I told you. In my university days, my aim was to have the best pleasure. And then I realized that to get the best pleasure, you need the best knowledge. So I already achieved that aim, so now I'm distributing. Purpose?
I don't know.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. To be happy, but then I'm quite undecided, so I don't know what.
How do you think you could be happy?
A lot of things, but like right now, the degree I do is good, but then I don't know if I'd do that forever.
What did you do, I'm sorry?
Optometry.
Yes.
So I don't know if I'd do that throughout my whole life, so I think there'll be a point where
you get tired
bored of it.
And so you mean right now, you wake up in the morning, optometry.
No. Just lots of things that keep changing, so I don't know what my purpose is.
Do you think it's worth it to find out?
It'd be good to find out. Mm. Well, I don't
it
know
could affect your future income, though, right? If you
could, but then that could go in the way.
To find out what your purpose is, you actually have to know what you are. If you think you're just matter, then your purpose will be just a material purpose. But if you think that you're more than matter, then you have to come up with another mission for yourself. What do you think? Are you just matter? A hunk of matter? Why not?
Because you feel and...
You're a feeling piece of matter. Right, so once again, this is the problem with Western social civilization. No clear understanding of identity. Therefore, how can people understand how to be happy? So how do you get around all that? You may not know who you are, but make the money and you'll be successful. That's the gift of contemporary Western society to the world. Don't worry about these things. Just work, buy, consume, and die.
But then you'll reach that point where you'll always reach that point where you realize after that all of that that you did wasn't worth it. If you keep on just earning and living, then you'll reach that point where you think that you didn't live life.
Right. An intelligent person will reach that point. But you can keep yourself intoxicated, wasted enough so you, you know, never think like that. Most people do, right? Or you just watch TV all day and night.
Still a waste.
But if you sedate yourself through intoxication, yes, you won't think about these things.
I won't, so I will think about
it. You won't sedate yourself through intoxication. Okay, all right then. So then you have to deal with these issues. And that's not a bad thing, because actually you'll have a chance for the greatest knowledge, the greatest pleasure. Any purpose?
To an extent, I don't know as well, but I think society nowadays is just, everything is more rooted along, you know, your materialistic things, and sometimes I feel, yeah, I know that that's not what I want, and you know.
Really, what do you want?
I don't know what I want, but you know, something, there must be something else, and you know, sometimes it's hard to forget, you know, you want that, or you feel more ready to accept something else some days, but some days you'll get pulled away from that again.
To what? Get pulled away to what?
To society and what it demands and all the, you know.
But you're a part of society.
Yeah. But I just think different societies have different ideas of living a life, and so you go to different societies and you might be expected to do something else, or you know, they might have a different way of thinking. So how society is now, where I am, from what I see, is, you know, right now I think a lot of the time, a lot of the things around don't help to find whatever it is you're looking for in life. Just to.
So what are you gonna do?
I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know. You know, I have people around me to guide me and help me, but
guide you where?
Guide you to find that something more. But in the end, you have to do it for yourself. No one can really, I think.
What are you studying?
Optometry as well.
Optometry. Okay. Well, why do you go to school to study optometry? Why don't you just, you know, it's very simple. You're dealing with what, glass and plastic and.
I think it's against you with society, what you have to do, you know.
No, why do you go to school to study optometry? Why don't you work it out for yourself?
I had to do something, so, you know.
No, but just work it out for yourself, you know, how to, you know, optometry, just those eyeglasses, what's the big deal, you know? Sticking glasses on someone's eyes. Can you see? What is that? What's that letter up there? What's the big deal? But you are going to school to study optometry. Of course, you hope to make money and you have to have a career like that. But you're going to school to study optometry, recognizing that you can't work it out for yourself. You've got to learn what is optometry.
Yeah, but I think in the end, I'm the one who has to understand what I'm doing, and, you know, even though I'm being...
So that means you need education.
Yeah.
Higher education.
Yeah.
Him, what is the nature of the self? What is the nature of the supreme self? And you can't work it out on yourself, just like you can't work out optometry yourself. You just have to get the best education. So that's the way I thought. I have to get the best education.
You can get the best education, and, you know, obviously you need someone to help you through, but...
Yes.
But at the same time, you have to have, you know, a part of you has to think, you know, okay, I don't want, you know, you can't just accept what you're being told and just completely take everything, you know, as you've been told, and you have to accept it yourself as well.
No, what you're saying, what I hear you saying is that you have to experience it. So Krishna conscious knowledge is about entering the laboratory. You apply your instruments, your senses, you get the result. So you have to see that.
But you have to be willing to see that as well.
Well, you have to have some desire for higher pleasure. Right. Right? And your purpose?
I think the purpose is to try and understand what's around, to try and understand everything that's happening, like why some people tend to do that, but why some people are satisfied just being in the materialistic world. Just trying to understand, like, you know, some people are just happy just being not knowing that there's something out there. Some people are happy like that.
What about you? We'll get to you.
What do you mean, like?
They may be doing so many things. What about you?
I don't know what my purpose is. I don't see, like, I don't think, like, in the future, what am I meant to be doing, or what am I... In the short-term future, I see, like, but in the long-term, I don't see the purpose in the long-term, like, am I meant to be doing this, am I meant to be doing that, I don't.
Okay, that's all right.
I think purpose in life is...
No, your purpose.
Or my purpose, I want to be happy.
And how are you going to do that?
That's the thing, I don't know.
What do you think? What do you think you should do?
Living in the society that we do, that everyone else that you see is... I apologize, I'm losing my voice, that's why I want to speak.
It's all right.
You live in the society that we do, like, you see the successful people, the materialistically successful people as being happy. They drive a nice car, they've got a nice house, and I want to be happy, and I think that might make me happy. So I think my aim in life is to just find what will make me happy, and whatever that may be. So if it's a nice house or a nice car or a family or I don't know. I think once I've found it, then I will know. Does that make sense at all?
Well, what are you studying?
I studied optometry. Really crowded this.
Crowded field, huh? So, just like you're studying optometry, there should be some formal study so that you can understand what is the self and what is the highest pleasure. We need education, but that education is not being given. That's the problem. So therefore, we get this sense that you can feel here, a person's cast adrift. Yeah, I don't know, you know, I just want to be happy, but I don't know how it's going to come, but I guess I'll just do something, you know, and let's see what happens. And it's like cast adrift because of lack of proper education.
No, I don't even know really what I have to answer or to say anything to do that. Like, I chose optometry because I thought it made me happy. I thought that I would be able to, like, doing what I do, I would be able to make a difference in life and possibly make other people happy by, like, giving them sight, right? So maybe that will make me happy. So it's more of a journey for me to find out what will make me happy, and these are the decisions I've made so far.
Well, once again, you have to decide. Not decide. You have to get a clear vision of who you are. What are you? Then you can start thinking about how to be happy. Are you the body? Are you the mind? Or something more?
Before I came to these talks, I thought it was just you are the human body and that is it. And then coming to these talks, you realise that you are a lot more. Like, everyone is the same, essentially the same person, like the same matter. But then on a higher level, the personality does make a difference. And where that may come from, the soul or the brain or whatever it is, that's what makes me me.
Your consciousness.
Yeah.
And of course, there's no scientific explanation of consciousness, so therefore people are kind of lost as to who they are and what they're supposed to be doing. You may hear that, well, consciousness is just something that emanates from the brain. It's the product of a neurochemical reaction. There's no proof for that, though. It's a belief. There's no proof. And honest scientists will say, we don't know what consciousness is. We hope to find out someday. Some scientists say you'll never figure out what consciousness is. It's beyond the reach of science as constructed now. Some scientists will say, we are sure that consciousness is material. But of course, there's no proof. It's just their religious belief. So this is the big problem. We don't know who we are. In other words, if you're conscious, how do you make consciousness happy? Why should you try to make yourself happy if your consciousness by material methods? Maybe those methods aren't working.
To me, happiness is a feeling, it's not a material.
Like, what kind of feeling?
it's not, you can't bundle happiness up and give it to someone. It's like, it's in your head or your soul or wherever, your heart, whatever it is. I don't know really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the problem. No one really knows. And your purpose?
To be honest, I don't know.
That's good.
I don't think anybody can really answer that question unless they know everything about everything.
Ah, that's smart. So why not know everything about everything? That was my goal. Exactly. That's
life's too short for that.
No, you just have to, you have to get the right education.
But can we fit in all that education into one life that we're given?
Yes. You find the source of everything and take your knowledge from there. That's the Krishna conscious approach. You find the source and take your knowledge from there.
How do you know when you know?
Yeah, I was about to say that. How do you know that your way is right? Because obviously...
That's a different question.
But okay, fine, how do you know?
One at a time now.
How do you know when you know everything? Is the ultimate knowledge is contained within that?
What was the last thing you said? Because what is contained within
that? Within the ultimate knowledge that you talk about is the...
It's a sensory experience. Actually, what's behind your question is the ultimate reality. Is it sensory? That's what's behind your question.
I don't know what you really define as knowledge.
Right. I'm giving you a different understanding of knowledge.
Yeah.
It's not something theoretical, it's not belief.
I always think of it as information on a page, but it's not.
Well, the information on the page should be the gateway to an experiential reality.
Yeah, but the kind of knowledge you're talking about, it could never be written down.
Why not?
Well, because it's just it's a sensory. It's in your consciousness.
But when you read something on a page, that's sensory. As you say, the page is full of recorded information. It's like Bhagavad Gita, for example. Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita, and the words are recorded on the page.
He's just describing the knowledge, but he's not actually.
How do you know?
Because then we could all just read it and we'd have the knowledge, but it's not.
I mean, that would work. I can't be like that.
It's a bit easier, isn't it?
You've got to actually experience it firsthand.
Yes.
Well, that's proof rather than knowledge, isn't it?
If you, for example, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm now going to explain to you the process, how your mind can be attached to me. You'll understand everything fully. There won't be any doubts. Just listen. I'll tell you how to do it.
It's just a set of instructions.
Huh?
So it's a set of instructions.
Yes, so if you follow the instructions, you get the result.
Okay. Well, can I ask what results you have?
Mm-hmm.
What results do you have present?
The first results you'll experience are that you're not the body or mind. Your whole misconception of thinking, I am matter, I'm a product of material nature, that'll go away. That's the beginning.
But isn't that a belief?
No.
Like, because it's just a belief that you're no longer the body.
You can experience it. If he punches you in the nose, is that a belief?
No.
Okay. So why do you say that?
Can you just describe it? Like,
when your girlfriend gives you a big hug, is that a belief?
No.
No. You have senses. So Krishna consciousness is about the senses interacting with the highest level of reality.
So what the senses are different from what you would normally experience in earth, is that what you're saying?
Your senses become purified through the bhakti yoga process. Right now, what's cooking up, gumming up your senses is interaction with matter. But when your senses are given spiritual sense objects to connect with, your senses become purified and suitable conduits for connecting to the ultimate reality.
Okay. So when they're purified, do you get different sensations then? Is that what you're saying?
You could say like that, yeah, you get different sensations.
Well, I'm just asking what your proof would be then, because everyone
the proof
says
the proof is experiential. The proof of the pudding is in the taste.
Okay, but what are you experiencing then?
Hmm?
What are you experiencing?
I'm just explaining. Your experiences will begin with your clear perception that you're non-material. You're a particle of spiritual consciousness.
So is that a realization?
But by the wording, that's a perception.
No.
Because there's people who are like mentally ill who perceive that there's pink elephants running around all the place, you know?
Well, that's why we have standard guidebooks, spiritual textbooks, which corroborate your experience.
Okay.
So you don't delude yourself.
Okay.
And that's why you have experts in the field who can also corroborate your experience. So you're not just, you know, out there on your own, you know. It's true, you could lock yourself into self-delusion. But that's why there's Bhagavad Gita, there's Srimad Bhagavatam, there are experts in the field who, just like if you go on to your PhD, you know, your dissertation has to be reviewed, you know.
Yeah.
So many things like that.
Sure.
To make sure that, you know, and they want to see that you have studied the authorities, and you know, you have to have references, right?
Yeah.
Similarly.
Okay.
Checks and balances.
So if, this might seem slightly strange, but if medically you cause psychosis, a loss of touch with reality,
if
so
what?
Would you, in medically speaking, psychosis is a loss of touch with reality.
Based on that definition, everyone's crazy.
But then
you're crazy based on that definition. You are crazy. Right?
Mm.
You don't know what reality is. I don't know what reality is. I don't have a purpose, but I hope that by helping others who imagine they have a purpose, you know, I don't have a purpose. That's my
concept.
Huh?
Oh my god. But, you know, but then KC is just a form of self-imposed psychosis.
Self-imposed? What's the self that's doing the imposition?
Your mind.
Whose mind?
The person that is choosing to.
And what's the nature of that person?
I can't answer.
Exactly. Now you know why, at least for example in the USA, psychiatrists have the highest suicide rate of all occupations. Yeah. They come to this conclusion, they just. Yeah, up against a brick wall. Who's sane? Who's crazy? Do you know it? They have the highest suicide rate of all occupations.
They start to question themselves.
Because they just, you know, they just, you know, what's it all about, you know? Why not just kill yourself?
But it might be the other way around. It might be that that's why they go into it in the first place. Because they're curious.
Well, anyway, obviously their curiosity isn't fulfilled. They decide to just, you know, move away from themselves. Yes?
Grow better as a person.
Grow better.
I think better is different to like different people, like according to nurture as well. So I think there has to be some sort of balance between like selfish instinct and society, like your moral side as well.
Moral side? That sounds pretty old fashioned.
I was talking about like Thomas Hobbes and like the dual model of like human nature, like about our selfish instincts, which are like biological, and like the side to us that can live with like society, like that can kind of like compromise and change.
Okay, so you have your biological instincts, and then there's society. So what do you plan to do for society? Because actually,
well,
we can.
If I make myself better, I'm sure that
how do you make yourself better? Better, more efficient execution of biological instincts?
By learning. not total execution. You just learn from your experiences, don't you?
What do you learn?
You learn how to do things better, I guess. And that's how you become better. What? I'm confused.
That's the honest of you. All right. Yes?
I think I've made the purpose of my life to just try and be successful, really.
Well, we didn't expect you to say you want to be a failure. But what do you want to be successful at?
I guess it. Life, living, you know?
What's it like to have a successful life? Give us a picture of your successful life. What do you see out there when you see your successful life? What comes to your mind?
I always thought it's like having a good job, like good family.
What's a good job? What's a good job? Making good money, huh?
Yeah, well, you're helping people.
Helping people to do what?
I'm also a medic.
Helping people to do what?
To get better.
To get better at what?
At living that.
Better at making money. Better at being an illusion. Better at being purposeless.
I guess there's a better element of that.
Better at taking pharmaceuticals.
I guess my starting point was always to. I guess it's an element of like chewing the chew, like improving on what my parents.
Oh, you remember that example, chewing the chew, huh? Very good. So your parents chewed 33 times. They don't teach that in med school anymore, that you're supposed to masticate the food 33 times.
I'll remember that next time I come.
Okay. So you've masticated 33 times the food. Try it next time you eat. Get a mouthful and just give you out. Do the medically prescribed method 33 times.
Do you do that?
I don't eat. Actually, I don't eat food that requires you to chew 33 times. If you're a flesh eater, then yeah. You gotta worry about those. I'm non-carnivorous. I don't need to chew 33 times. I can slurp it down. All right, so success and make it better.
Yeah. What?
Money, good job. What else? Family.
Yeah.
What's a good family? Tell us what a good family looks like.
two and a half kids and a dog.
I don't know. I always
sitting with the family watching telly together.
No. I thought also having, I guess, intelligent kids.
Having intelligent kids, like the ones here.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have a clue what they're doing or why.
I've been reading like spiritual texts and stuff, and so I think I have to kind of just dovetail this desire to have a successful life, and a successful life is a
Okay, fair enough. That's a good beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good beginning. We don't expect that, you know, you just jump into the spiritual unknown and leave aside all that's known to you. It's a very, very, very rare person who can do that. I didn't do that. For me, it was just a gradual acclimation to the superior pleasure, the superior knowledge. It's not that, you know, from one day to the next, I suddenly, you know, might do a major polar shift or something. That wasn't like that at all.
So what was your... like, what was your progression?
I just began to study the Krishna conscious spiritual texts and started to apply the laboratory procedures, and I was, yeah. And then gradually my illusion started to subside, started to go away, and the nature of the spiritual reality, the Krishna conscious reality, became more clear. To the extent that I could see that I could really help people if I could help them to get out of their ignorance and understand real knowledge. Real knowledge meaning how to live so they can get the highest pleasure beyond temporary pleasure. I thought that would be the best thing to do. I mean, anyway, I have a brother who's a doctor. He's in charge of a clinic. He's got 100 doctors working under him. Yeah. I have another brother. He's a lawyer. He's a vice president of Toyota North America. You know, so yeah, they're successful, but they always come to me. My brother, who's a doctor, you know, he's got all the statistics. You know, 2.5 kids, 2.5 cars in the garage. You know, he came to me once. You know, with tears in his eyes. Oh, the routine, I can't take it. How did you avoid it? Youngest brother, the one who's a vice president for Toyota North America, he's a Harvard Law graduate. His wife's a Harvard Law graduate. He doesn't want to think about anything too deeply. But she's very concerned, you know. As soon as he walks out of the door, she's, dude, I gotta figure out what's it about. Come on, tell me something. As soon as he comes back in, yeah. So, you know, I ask you, what's a successful life?
One where you're thinking about God.
Oh, very good. Then you have to understand what is God. That is the highest quest. But you have to actually get knowledge.
Would you call yourself happy then?
It's not so difficult to be happy.
I don't know, but like, how can people be happy when so many people are miserable? Like,
the only way you can do that is if you're actively working to give them real help. But if you're just being selfish about it, no, that's...
So it's not a selfish thing.
But if you're actually working to give persons the best, then you can rest in peace knowing you're giving the best. Okay? So yes, it's very good. You want to understand what is God. Then you need to find the most comprehensive, deepest knowledge of what is God. Just like if someone says that they know you, you would expect that they have some deep knowledge of you. Suppose someone walks in this room and says, I know her. Hey, girl. Hey, a girl. Are they wrong, factually?
Well, I am a girl, but more than that.
No. Are they wrong, factually?
I guess not.
Okay, but it doesn't show that they know you very well, right?
Yeah.
The simile, if you say that there's God, there's the Supreme, that's all right, but it's not very deep knowledge. It's like saying, hey, girl. Better than nothing. So similarly, if you want to understand what is God, then you have to find the deepest knowledge available. Once you get the deepest knowledge of what is God, you'll have the deepest relationship. Relationships are based on understanding.
How do you know that Christian consciousness is the way to the deepest knowledge of God?
You should check it out and see. The deepest knowledge of what is God should tell you everything. Just like how does someone know you in the best way? What should they know?
Well, I guess spending time with you.
Yeah, exactly. Spend time with you. And what, by spending time with you, what would they learn?
But they learn, I guess, about my background.
Your background.
About what I've done, my fears, my hopes, my aims.
Yes.
You know, people I interact with.
They know you're all about your qualities, your activities.
Yeah.
Well, similarly, to understand what is the Supreme, those are things you should know. But if you just say, oh, there's just some impersonal whatever, there's just some vague force, you know, that doesn't show very much knowledge, does it? So our point that we're humbly trying to present is that Krishna consciousness gives you the deepest understanding of what is the Supreme. It's not a question of this way is wrong and that way is right. It's a question of different levels, that's all. Just like, for example, since we have so many optometry students here, someone who is training to be, what are the technicians called?
Expensive.
They're not wrong, but they're not expected to have as much knowledge as someone who, you know, does the full university course in optometry, right? You can just be a technician, right? You know. So it's not that the technicians are wrong. They just what? They go to school just a couple of years or something to be a dispenser.
I think it's 2 or 3 years they do it, but they learn different things.
No. But aren't there courses you can take just to, you know, 1 or 2 years just to be a, you know, an assistant?
Oh, you can. That's just someone off the street. They're trained for a couple of weeks.
Okay, all right. So they know something, right?
Off the street.
Just like, you know, you have dentists and then dental technicians. It's not the same with optometry. we'll talk about dentistry now. You have someone who's gone the full route studying to be a dentist. You have someone who's just like a dental technician. You know, they
2 years training.
Yeah, they help the dentist, you know, hold those things in your mouth and suck out the water. A dental nurse, like. So, it's not that they're wrong, it's that they don't have as much knowledge. So try to see things in terms of levels of knowledge, not like, you know, well, there's this way, there's that way, how do you know what the right way is? See different levels of knowledge. If you really want to understand what is the Supreme, you need the deepest knowledge. It's like you would want someone to really understand you. If someone just says, hey girl, they're factually correct, but it just doesn't show much understanding. Right?
Yeah.
And you want to be understood. So you're a tiny conscious entity and you want to be understood. So what about understanding the Supreme Conscious Entity and the relationship between the two? So different religions give different glimpses of his ultimate reality, but you should want the whole picture in depth. Then you'll have the highest pleasure.
We can never...
Who says we can never?
But can
Who said that? Who said that?
But can we have full knowledge?
Huh? Can you have what?
Can we have, like, full knowledge? Surely.
Why not?
God,
what are you studying? You're studying medical science?
Medicine.
Well, I mean, of course, it's not a good example because, you know, medical professions in many ways quite controversial these days. Western knowledge of the body and how to heal the body, it's under a lot of fire. But just conventionally speaking, you're a doctor, that means you're supposed to know all about the human body. If I'm a patient and I'm ill and I come to you and you say, well, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. What should I say? Well, doctor, is it possible that you can have full knowledge? You don't want to hear that. You say, look, this is what you gotta do, you wanna get well. So you would accept that there is at least enough knowledge in the medical system that you could cure someone most of the time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you accept, if you have that much conviction about Western medical science, then what's wrong with trying to get the full spiritual knowledge? Western medical knowledge is so shaky. It's known to be so shaky these days, you know? And yet you're going on?
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. So what would be the loss if you tried to understand Krishna? What do you got to lose? If you win, you win big.
Is it possible to juggle like the two together? Because when you're...
Yeah, you need some guidance, though. You can't do it on your own.
Yeah, but I mean, like, as a devotee, you're like... fully committing yourself to that.
No,
work.
We have different, just like at the university, they're professors. Not everyone at the university is a professor. So don't let, I mean, my status kind of bewilder you. You know, I'm just I'm a specialist. But, just like, you studied optometry, didn't you?
Orthotics.
What's the difference?
Orthotics is to do with muscle problems
in
the eyes.
Her husband over there, he studied pharmacy. They have a house, Their husband and wife. But they're husband and wife for the purpose of enlightenment. They're a husband and wife for the purpose of helping each other to march on the path of enlightenment, of Krishna consciousness. That's the big difference.
How do you know that Krishna consciousness is like that gives you the most knowledge compared to, maybe other ways of life or other?
It's very simple. Look for where you can get the deepest and best knowledge of the self and the deepest and best knowledge of the Supreme. Look for, make a quantitative analysis. I already gave the point. It's like, hey girl, that's not wrong. But, okay, how would we know who knows her the best? How would you judge?
They could, if they could answer the next question about me correctly.
Yeah, they know about her qualities, her activities. They know her desires, what she thinks. So that... kind of information you need to find out about the Supreme.
But with a lot of ways of life or religions, you need to spend a lot of time trying to...
No, I'm teaching you how to make short shrift to it all.
Then it's hard to decide, hard to find out.
No, I'm teaching you how to analyze. This is education. I'm giving you skills. Yes! I'm making it too easy and too clear, is that it?
No.
I can be accused of that, of making things too clear. Okay, let's make everything all obscure and confused and whatever way you think, you know, I mean, you know, who really knows, you know what I mean? It's whatever, you know. Okay, how's that?
Who would you say is the judge of who quantifies what is correct and what is partially correct? Like,
as a human being, it is your responsibility to find the most comprehensive knowledge, spiritual knowledge available. That's your responsibility.
But like you say, it's with most, a lot of scriptures, it's been going on for a long time. And in the case of, say, Beatrice, in the example you gave of who knows her best, she can be the judge of, from the information she gains from others, who knows her best, who, what says where, say, something.
No, you can judge. You can judge. Assuming people are telling the truth and assuming that you understand something about Beatrice.
Yeah.
You can listen. Well, can you tell me something about her? Tell me something about her. And you can analyze. And that'll give you a pretty good idea who knows her the best, right?
A pretty good idea.
Pretty good idea. But the best idea, the clearest idea will come when you yourself know her. But there's nothing wrong in starting off by, well, what do you have to say about her? No, you don't know her that well. What do you have to say? a little bit better. There's nothing wrong in starting off with that. But ultimately, you have to know. But still, there's nothing wrong with starting off by, oh, nah, not so much. Yeah, a bit better.
How can we know when we're 100% correct in what we know?
Oh, that you have to do. Like, you have to take up a process by which your senses will become purified so that your senses can properly interact with the spiritual reality. That is the Krishna consciousness process. With your current senses as their function, you can't know anything beyond matter.
Yeah, like I know they say someone can tell you the direction to get somewhere. Unless you take that direction, you can never know.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is urging you to enter the bhakti laboratory. But you have to walk in. Yeah. Just like if you're going to a party. I know you never go to parties, right? Right. So you're going to a party, and someone says, well, how do you know how you're going to feel once you get there? Well, you've got to get there first. Your purpose?
Well, I'm confused as well, so my purpose would just be to be happy in life.
How can you be happy when you're confused?
Well, just to be cared for by people who I care for, maybe.
Find a good guy who cares. Well, that's hard these days. Ask the guys, they'll tell you themselves. Right? We don't care. We just want a good time, hey? I'm not supposed to reveal the male program yet. Isn't that so? Yeah, he's a miss. Guys don't care. They just want a good time.
Well,
you know what psychologists say are the two words that men fear the most to hear from a woman? Let's talk. You know? Guys, they don't want to listen to a woman talk.
I don't think it's all just about that. That's why people actually stay together for such a long time, because it's not just all that.
Alright, you're entitled to your dreams. The male program is very powerful.
I don't know, I think I just want to learn as much as I can and then share it with other people.
So what's the best thing to learn?
Well, the thing is, because I'm a journalist, so I like finding out about things and then informing people. So helping, you know, because sometimes, as you're saying, you know, with ignorance and things, and obviously...
The news media as now existing actually informs people?
Well, no, but I mean, it depends what I go for. Yeah, but the thing is, right, I'm not a journalist yet, firstly, and hopefully I won't ever sell my soul to...
Oh, come on, you're going to have to pay the rent, pay the mortgage, the car payment, you know.
But I think that's why when you're younger, at least you haven't got as many ties, so you can try and do as much as you can then, really.
So then that's what? Now is the best time for you to answer these questions, as we've been discussing. Because later when you're older, you could be easily bought off. You have some kids, and then you think, why should I, you know, I don't have time to figure out, you know, who I am. I got these kids here, you know. It happened. My brother's wife, she's a Harvard Law graduate, and now she's going for another PhD in, like, urban education. So she caught the professor making a mistake, and she had to decide whether to challenge him or not. And then she began to think, well, actually, you know, I've got a family, I've got a husband and kids, it's not really good for me to, you know, it wouldn't be productive overall if I challenged him. She did partially. She raised her hand in class and said, excuse me, but, you know, he kind of started stuttering. This is at Columbia University, which is, you know, sort of top grade school in USA. So then, as she was leaving the seminar room, he kind of said to her, so no one else would hear, you know, you're going to pay for this. So the way he did it was, she was a top student in the class, so instead of giving her an A on her paper, he gave her like a B+. You know? Yeah, nothing too severe, so she couldn't make a big complaint about it. But she knew what it was for, he knew what it was for, and he even told her, you know, you're going to pay for this. So I said, why didn't you make a big protest? You know? And, well, I thought about it, but then, you know, I've got a family, I've got kids.
Yeah, but you can try, can't you, at least, even if I know...
Try to do what?
Well, the thing is, I know there will always be big people that can try and mess up, you know, even if you try and inform people, or if you try and...
What do you want to inform the people of?
Well, it can be whatever. It can be about, say, companies and how they're unethical or something, and then maybe they come and, I don't know, you know, they can send someone in to assassinate you if they want to.
No, they don't have to assassinate you. They just pay you off. Just like, for example, here's an example. ExxonMobil. It's the most, you know, profitable, you know, multinational corporation in the world. Last year, their profit was $50 billion, clear profit, 1 year. So they admit they have a slush fund of about a mere $10 million. And what they do with the slush fund is they offer that any scientists who will help to produce doubt in the theory of global warming, they give you $10,000 for the first essay, and they'll take it from there. And they were asked, why are you doing this? You know, I mean, you know, how can you do this like this? It's not that we're trying to make propaganda. It's just that, you know, it's not an airtight case, global warming, climate change. We just want that, you know, to present the other side, and we're just encouraging scientists to present the other side. That's all. And we just happen to contribute some money for their research, and so I admit, yeah. They said, yeah, we got a $10 million fund for it.
But with global warming now, all the big companies are endorsing it because they can see that they can use it to their advantage.
Of course. Well, it's always going to be like that. Therefore, unless you have a program to purify consciousness, you're never going to stop this stuff. You won't stop the male exploitation program. You won't stop the female exploitation program. You won't stop ExxonMobil's exploitation. You won't stop the pharmaceuticals from exploiting. And on and on and on. So you have to have a program for cleansing consciousness, elevating consciousness. So that's why I'm here to present that the Krishna Consciousness Program is of the prime necessity for human beings. So I hope that some of you pursue this further. Hopefully tonight we've given you something to think about. I can feel there's a lot of potential in this room, a lot of energy, but a lot of that potential energy will generally, it'll just go the route of the chewing that which has already been chewed. That is the tragedy.
Sorry, can I just ask you a question? Mm-hmm. You were saying earlier that a lot of people become interested in Krishna consciousness and they want to develop themselves and they want to explore and they want to understand, but then a lot of people are torn away from it. So why do you think...
No, I didn't say a lot. I just said that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna points out what happens to practitioners who take up the process and then stop. They still benefit.
But why do you think they are limited? Why do you think some people don't go all the way and some people don't?
Because of weakness, you know, the illusory energy, the matrix of illusion is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're careful,
mm-hmm.
you can be swept back into it.
Mm-hmm.
Still, you won't lose whatever spiritual progress you make. You'll take your credits, your university credits, into your next life. You can't do that at Cardiff University, though. You know, your credits don't go into your next life. All right, very interesting. Well, I've certainly learned a lot by being here with you all. Very lively. More lively than, let's see, students at the University of Manchester. He just finished his PhD at University of Manchester. Just finished his PhD last week. Yeah, so yeah, they're more lively than, aren't they?
Yeah.
He's finished his PhD in internet technology. He doesn't think that that's solved all his problems in life and made him successful. Actually, he'll tell you, what's the PhD system for IT, you know, at the advanced level, like internet technology? What it is like British Telecom, rather than paying scientists, figures out, we'll just contribute to a university and we'll get, you know, PhD students to do at a, you know, a small expense what we have to pay research scientists, you know, a big salary to do. So we just, you know, we just go to the university and say, here's X amount of money, we'd like, you know, can you do research in a particular field? The university says, they say, great, we'll get some PhD students, you know, who work on it. So it's actually like slave labor. But you know, they say, well, you get your PhD, we get your research for a cheap price. What's the, you know, everyone gets something. That's how the game was played. Well,
what's the best book to read to start, if you're interested in it?
Mm. I'd recommend you read Bhagavad Gita, but cover to cover before you form a judgment.
Yeah.
Because you're going to find a lot in it that's exotic, a lot that's beyond your current cultural framework. But if you just go from cover to cover, by the end, you'll be a different person.
Mm-hmm.
It'll rewire your circuits. That's what I recommend.
We have one. Man.
But not jumping around.
Okay.
The library angel approach. You know about the library angel? Yeah. Well, whenever I want to know something, I just pick up a book and I just let it open to whatever page the library angel guides me. You can't study anything seriously in that way. So read, by the way, either from cover to cover. And if you like, you can even, you can drop me a line if you have some questions. Wait. Hold your fire till the end. It's fair enough.
Yeah. Have you explored all of the other religions then? Yeah, to compare it with?
It's not too difficult to explore everything else. Once you know what the standard is, it's easy. Just like...
Where do you read Christianity? On the level of understanding? Does it not work?
Huh?
Does it not work?
Well, this is a long... That's a question that requires a bit of a long answer. But, as I say, it's not a question of this being right and that being wrong. It's about different levels. You can only speak according to the level of the persons who are listening. So you have to look at the audience.
Would you say that Christianity...
Hold on, hold on. He's got one here. I just sparked something up. He got me to read Bhagavad Gita, so now I got a score too. Let's continue with this point about audience. You can only teach according to the level of the person in the audience. It's like those who are studying optometry. Can you handle what a PhD candidate for a PhD in optometry can handle? Can you? No. And the professor would be making a big mistake to speak to you on that level. We don't have anyone studying computer sciences back, right? Yeah, there's no jobs in that right now, so no one's But it would be if there were someone who was studying computer science, you know, it would be very unfair to have him just start speaking the stuff that he's dealt with as a PhD student. It'd be just way over their heads. Mm-hmm. So when you look at different spiritual systems, you have to understand the audience. Okay, whom was Jesus speaking to, as far as the Bible knows?
He was speaking to the Pharisees.
I wasn't really so much speaking to them. They weren't really receptive audience.
I thought he was just speaking to anyone that wanted to listen.
He was speaking to God, wasn't he? I suppose it doesn't matter who.
He's speaking to the common man who lived 2,000 years.
He's speaking to fishermen, persons like that. You know, very simple persons. Persons lived in the desert, not very advanced in overall knowledge.
Hold on.
Still, when you read Bhagavad Gita, you'll find out that Jesus was teaching bhakti yoga in a very simple way. In fact, he, according to the Bible, even told his followers, there are many things I long to tell you, but your ears cannot possibly bear to hear it. Any Bible students here? By the way, I was giving sermons in the Presbyterian church when I was 12 years old. So, you can only speak according to the capacity of your audience. Jesus was speaking to very simple people. That's why you won't find any quote unquote metaphysical knowledge in the Bible. It's not a metaphysical text. The Bible has to rely on Greek metaphysics in order to, Christian theologians are very much indebted to Greek metaphysics because there's no metaphysique in the Bible. That's a good understanding, right? Mm. Yes. Jesus taught very simple, love God with all your heart and like that. That's bhakti yoga in a very simple way. But if you're going to truly love God, if you're truly going to have this love supreme, you need deep knowledge. But he was speaking to simple people, so he just referred to my father. In my father's house, but no information about that. Just like when you read Bhagavad Gita, you'll find a lot that's in other spiritual texts and a lot that's not. And then after Bhagavad Gita, there's Srimad Bhagavatam, which takes all the themes of Bhagavad Gita and expands upon them.
But wasn't Krishna just talking to a warrior? So why was he given so much detail 5,000 years ago?
Well, he wasn't a warrior like the soldiers today. Yes. Guys are just drafted or conscripted into the army or join the army because they got nothing better to do, you know? Arjuna, that's whom Krishna spoke to. He is of a caliber far beyond human beings today. Far beyond. That's another thing you have to bear in mind when you're reading Bhagavad Gita. So because Arjuna was of a caliber far beyond human beings today, the knowledge presented in Bhagavad Gita is far beyond what's generally available in terms of spiritual texts. You have to look at the audience. Just like you would expect that a PhD audience in internet technology would be hearing things far beyond, you know, what an undergraduate class would be hearing. So what I'm trying to present you is a way out of the this spiritual text is right, this spiritual text is wrong syndrome. I'm trying to get you to see levels. I think that will be very liberating for you all. Because everyone always says, well, why is it always said that, you know, this is the only way, this is right, this one's wrong, and these are the infidels, these are the heathens, and on it goes, you know, all the mudslinging, you know. If you learn to see all the levels in the system, then you're spared from all that, you know, fanaticism.
So, does what happen is, depending on, say you do follow a certain level, which is not the highest level, but you follow with the exact same belief or inner, like, motive of what someone is on the top level, does that give them the chance, like, eventually to, like, be given that chance to get to that deeper level?
Yeah, well, if some, just like with Beatrice, if someone takes up the process to get to know her, that will pave the way for more knowledge of her. If you can demonstrate to her that you have some knowledge, she'll probably reveal ways you can have more knowledge.
One thing is with, especially with me, material happiness, there's always, it will peak, then it will drop, then it will peak, then it will drop. Mm-hmm. Obviously with spiritual, it's the aim of it's continuing, but is there that highest point of pleasure where it levels off? Is it always?
No. Material energy always involves beginnings and ends and satiations. The spiritual energy, of which you need to get experience of, there's no decline.
But is there a level off?
No. That's a material experience you're presenting.
So when is it where you reach the ultimate point?
There's no. You're thinking of the ultimate in terms of something static. It's not the case. You're dealing with real love. Real love is not limited by time and space or material bodies. The so-called love of this world is problematic because it's constrained by material body, material mind, time and space. That's why evil. Some of you already had the experience of, you know, being in love and then it fades away. Because it's ruled, the whole experience is ruled by time, affected by space, and it involves material bodies and minds. Here's a point of view. Do you know what the world average is for the duration of romance? See, scientists have statistics about everything these days. You know what the world average is? No, don't. You're not. You know?
6 months?
No, the world average is 17 months. Yeah. It's the world average.
Is that marriage or just general?
Romance! People can get married these days. Wait a minute. Come on, where are you from? It's a real goody-goody, huh? People don't want commitment. They just want to feel a temporary buzz, you know?
That's my
commitment stuff. He's too wholesome, isn't he? I mean, don't you know good guys finish last? Got to learn how to swim with the sharks.
I'll try.
Very interesting discussion today. So I hope that some of you will pursue Krishna consciousness and explore it through experience. I'll be very happy to hear your results of your Bhagavad Gita plunge. It'll be very interesting. At least even from the material point of view, you can tell everybody you read one of the world's great spiritual classics. You can always explain it away like that when they ask you, hey, what are you reading? Don't worry, it's one of the world's recognized, literary gems, that's all. So at least you can approach it that way.
Yeah.
So my point was, when you're reading Bhagavad Gita, accept its structure, accept its accept its conceptions, shall we call them. Accept it just hypothetically. Okay. Don't challenge every little thing you read immediately. Just let the thing develop, let the symphony unfold, and at the end you can fire away. Okay? That's fair enough. That's the best way to learn something.
Is it better to read that straight off than Science of Self-Realization?
No, Science of Self-Realization you can start with also. But he asked me, and I, based on my analysis of his consciousness, I gave the prescription. Yeah, everything is individual. Well,
I'd like to thank you, Marge, on behalf of everyone for taking time.
It's been a real pleasure. I didn't expect, I was just wondering in the car, 4 hours from London, and then the driver got lost, and I said, what's in store for me? But now I see it was all 100% worth it. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.